Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Buck coming to you live from downtown Milwaukee, day three of the RNC. Sweet Kelby back in the studio in Waukesha. You can always join us at 855-752-4842. Same number if you want to call and or text. Or you can leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. You hear reports across the Civic Media Radio Network. Our friend and the fabulous farm babe Pam Yonke is here. Good morning, lady. How are you?
Hey, kid. Pretty good. Looks like you guys are fine as frog's hair with the weather today, huh?
It's a nice day. It's a little breezy.
A little breezy.
But we'll take it. Not nearly as warm as it was on Monday. So this has been a lovely, lovely day. Lots going on, Pam. How are our farmers doing with all of this rain? Let's start there.
Okay. All right. Very good. Yeah. First of all, your folks that are nearest to you geographically are probably still hoping that breeze will continue. I got rainfall reports from Kenosha, for example, in areas like that, Burlington, over 2 inches of rain. So that means that after the ground was already saturated, it's still going to be pretty wet, even on a day like this. But the breeze that you've got, and of course, the fact that we are looking at drier weather right on into the weekend should help improve things considerably. And I'll be honest with you, kid, we're kind of the horse is out of the barn already on a lot of our crops. You've got high value folks that are down around that Kenosha Racine area, you know, the vegetable truck farms. If you're driving past those fields and you're seeing basically mud or low areas where there's nothing, the cat's out of the bag there. We aren't going to be able to salvage any of that acreage. We're just running out of time. We're running out of what we call degree growing units. So if you're still seeing bare spots in farm fields, that's the way she's going to be. So farmers are now facing not only decreased commodity prices, which have really, Wisconsin's the exception this year, not the rule. All the states around us have beautiful crops, but we don't. So now commodity prices have come down and we're looking at reduced yield and probably some quality issues, unfortunately, when it comes to the harvest of 2024. So it's better today than it was earlier this week. It's better. It'll be better tomorrow. And farmers are eternal optimists. We just tie a knot and hang on and see what we're going to get when the combines start to run in a couple weeks here.
Well, what else can you do, right? You gotta slog through it and figure out a way through it or a way around it. Greg lives in Kenosha, and I watched that line of storms come through the other night. It was unbelievable.
The couple days ago it was thundering so hard that I was nervous, and yesterday it was raining so hard the freeways were flooding.
Oh my. Yeah, like I said, that's the unfortunate part. It'd be different. Remember last year we couldn't squeeze a cloud to get a drop from an extreme situation last year that farmers weathered through, no pun intended, to this year. Our ground has been so saturated for the past month. Now there's no place for that water to go. So even, you know, your area, you get up towards Fond du Lac, Oshkosh, up the Fox Valley. There are communities that literally are still precariously looking at the clouds. Sunshine today, but if they get another half an inch, 3/4 of an inch, like you said, roads are compromised, and farmers continue to try to roll with the punches on this. Now, a lot of our farmers have started to try to capitalize on these cheaper commodity prices in the marketplace. If I'm not going to be able to grow it and I have to buy it, well, at least the prices are not as escalated as they've been. Maybe they strike a deal with a neighbor that has some tough-looking crops that aren't going to be able to make it to market as far as like number two yellow corn or something like that. So maybe a little bit more of that collaboration between our farmers. But yeah, the bottom line is if it's not planted, it's probably not going to be planted. And now we'll just wait until we start to see the harvest unfold before we know what the numbers are going to look like.
I know, Pam, at one point that there were actually some fundraisers being held for some of our farmers because, again, some of them are in some pretty tough spots. Are those still going on? Are there ways that people can help?
There's not a unified effort across the state. That's the first point I want to make. A lot of the individual efforts that you saw were really back when we had that super severe weather, where buildings were being torn apart, roofs were coming off, that Janesville community. Just talked to my buddy Bill McFarlane at McFarlane's Pheasant Farm, just like that F-20 two or whatever it was tornado hit his farm right smack dab in the middle. So individual communities have tried to respond as best they can. But Jane, you know, in the rural community, my farm folks, most of how we respond is bring a box of bars, bring a casserole over, pitch in, pick up tin, because that's the other thing people forget. Well, the news crew isn't there when barns collapse, when buildings go down, we end up with metal out in those fields that we've got to go retrieve before the crop gets too tall. Or when we start bringing our farm equipment in to harvest, all you got to do is run a piece of tin through a $500,000 combine or blow a $300,000 tire. Those kinds of things are what farmers want help with. And like I said, here in the Madison area, just west or just east of Madison, we had kind of a tornado come through, and all the FFA kids, hot as it was, they were out there picking up tin. So the help looks different. It's not just about financial. Sometimes it's just shoulder to shoulder walking a field.
I never thought of that, Pam, and it's just so logical. But I heard your interview with that pheasant farmer. And said too, I mean, they were just obliterated, the keeps that he had for his pheasants. And then you got to go and try and round up these birds. They're like, freedom.
Right. Yeah. Well, and, you know, the other part I hadn't thought about when I talked to Bill at McFarland's Pheasant, which is the largest pheasant partridge grower in North America. He said, even when if he catches the little rascals, and believe me, folks, they are little rascals. When he catches a little rascal, he's actually got to take him to a different farm because he's got to quarantine them. They've come in contact with natural birds, and avian influenza is still an issue potentially in Wisconsin. So he can't risk it bringing them back by the bigger flocks. He's got to find another barn at a separate premise so that he can keep the little rascals and make sure that they're not expressing illness.
Pam, I listen to the show every morning when I'm coming into work, and I do hear you talking about the avian influenza. And from what I understand, Wisconsin's really been lucky overall. We really haven't been affected as other areas. Can you talk more about that?
Oh, absolutely, Calvin. Yeah, you bet. So it's like, knock on wood, I hope that we do not have to report that Wisconsin has contracted avian influenza in our dairy herd. We understand how to deal with it very well in our avian population, be it backyard birds, or be it, unfortunately, the larger commercial operations we might have for egg production or turkey production. Dairy, we have been very, very good, primarily because we have biosecurity measures in place on individual farms. We also have the new mandate from the state of Wisconsin that says you will not move a lactating, meaning a milking dairy cow, you will not move her until she's tested negative for avian influenza. County fairs, where we normally co-mingle these animals, many county fairs have said, don't bring them. If you bring them, bring the test, or we'll allow you to substitute a young animal, a heifer, for that dairy cow so you can still participate without any penalty. So Wisconsin's done a very good job flexing, and we are very, very mindful that we are surrounded by states that have avian influenza in their dairy herd. Michigan is continuing to add cows that have detected positive. Minnesota, I believe, Illinois and Indiana. I'm not positive about Iowa. So we are guarding it. We are taking it very, very seriously. And I'm very pleased to report that thus far, we've done a wonderful job. And we are what is the new acronym? We're high path avian influenza dairy free. I can't remember my numbers.
We would not along to anything that you just said, Pam, because we don't know what that means. Pam,
that sounds so smart. That's exactly right, Pam.
We were going to say it just like that. Pam Yonke is the fabulous farm babe. You can hear her across the Civic Media Radio Network. She does great reporting on our farmers. And what you just said, Pam, about Wisconsin kind of being an outlier, to me, that is just indicative that our farmers are taking this very seriously. And as much of a pain as this mandate might be, this is for the good of everyone and for everyone's industry. You get one cow that slips in there, correct? That's infected, and that would be a nightmare.
Well, you suddenly put at risk America's dairyland, because if one goes down, we all go down. And stop and think about how much. So 90% of Wisconsin's cheese ends up outside of our borders. Now, we know that even if it were contracted, the pasteurization, homogenization process that we put our milk through means consumers should have no concerns. Consumers should remain confident, but you just don't know. You just don't know. And Wisconsin is so heavily invested in dairy. It's much better to tell the story of how well we're doing keeping it out than it is to talk about what measures we'd have to take if it occurred. So again, keeping our fingers crossed that we can continue to do a great job. And I'll be honest with you guys, it's easy to do because so many of our dairy farms, they grow their own cattle. This is another thing you don't necessarily think about unless you're a dairy king like me. So we keep all our cattle on the farm, from babies to teenagers to the milk cows. We do not move cows around a lot as other states do. We have what we call closed herds, where we are proud of our genetics. We want to grow our farm organically with what we've got. And that's been a saving grace in many regards to that particular issue.
This is going to sound like a silly question, but what, Dave, farmers in Illinois just want their cars to travel? Why are they moving their cows?
They might sell them to another farmer. They just move cattle more often. Their farms might be growing, so then they have to bring cattle in, and Illinois doesn't have the base of dairy cattle like we do. In Wisconsin, you want dairy cattle, you can go to a neighbor and find them instead of crossing state borders.
That makes sense.
There you go. Yeah.
All right, Pam Yonke is here, the fabulous farm babe. We are going to continue our conversation with Pam, and we'll talk about what is going on with that farm bill. I thought we had one. I thought there was something that was supposed to be going on with that. That is coming up next. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. Stay close. We're coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
She starts to cry. She takes a swing, man. She can't help. She don't mean no harm. She just don't know what else to do about it.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach coming to you live from downtown Milwaukee, day three of the RNC. The Calvinator back in Waukesha on the board and there to screen your calls at 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, or the platform that Elon continues to actively ruin. Our friend and colleague, the fabulous farm babe Pam Yonke, is here. And we're talking about, again, what our farmers have been dealing with from one season to another. The challenges never end, Pam. Like you said, last year it was droughts. This year we can't catch a break with as far as water is concerned. Yeah. And now I'm curious as to what is happening with the farm bill.
Zip. Zippity-doo-dah. There is not a thing happening. It is, in fact, later this afternoon, I'm going to be talking with some Wisconsin soybean growers. Don Lutz is out there, and he's one of the Wisconsin soybean board members that's trying to nudge them. Please get something going. And honestly, although everybody, when you hear the phrase farm bill, you say, well, that's just for farmers. Correction, my friends. Remember, U.S. Department of Agriculture also administers the Women, Infant, and Children program, the SNAP program. A lot of the elderly benefits with EBT cards come through USDA. There's conservation programs that come through USDA. Food Inspection Service, protecting our borders as far as insects and disease. So there's a lot in that enchilada. And unfortunately, the enchilada is still waiting on the truck to be delivered. There is nothing happening. There's a lot of talk right down the road from you in Waterford right now at the Great American Farm Fair at Mel Sheen's family farm, where Republican leaders are getting together. And I'll bet you they're getting peppered by by the farmers in the audience about, come on, what is happening? Because farmers have to make decisions and they need to know what the long-term play is on the federal government's approach to everything from crop, crop insurance, right on through to federal milk marketing orders. I mean, those are the technical nibbles that farmers are waiting for white smoke to come up on what direction we're supposed to be going. So like I said, there's all kinds of people that are anxious about why no action and very anxious about we can't get it done now. What in the blazes of Haiti is going to happen after November and how long into, I mean, we're just, you want to keep kicking the can down the road, but farmers need certainty.
Absolutely. And again, this has been languishing. It just feels like forever. And I'm wondering if some of the sticking points aren't exactly what you mentioned, Pam, some of those programs that help women and children with benefits and EBT and all of those things. And I would imagine farmers aren't resentful of those programs, no, are they?
No. It is, but to your point, how many farmers or people connected to agriculture do you believe even are in the nation's capital to understand the incredible importance of the mechanism for production agriculture? Now, on the other side of that, how many people believe that they've got at least a working idea on women, infant, children, EBT, SNAP? So they want to get in on the conversation. They want to puff their feathers and say, hey, look at me, look at me. I'm talking about the farm bill and these elements. I don't begrudge them that, but when you try to slow the process down, you try to make it more difficult than it has to be, then the nation's farmers are the ones that really suffer. And it's not getting any easier because now we've got Supreme Court rulings that call into question. Some Bureau of Land Management is now in litigation with National Cattlemen's Association. There's just all kinds of stuff like that that continue to create a quagmire for a clear path forward for production agriculture. And with our commodity prices, it just becomes more and more frustrating.
You know, you said something earlier, just the eternal optimism that the farmers have, and something that I've learned from listening to the show and just talking to you in the past is just that keep your head down and keep going in the face of all of this happening, just trying to, you know, at the end of the day, you need to plant, you need to harvest, and you need to get your commodities out to the world, and your constant optimism and is so appreciated, but I just can't imagine how difficult it is for you.
It's the way you grow up, Greg. I'll be honest with you. It's the way you grow up. All of my assistants, same way. You work until the job is done. We don't punch the clock. You start and then you finish the job, however long that takes. When farmers plant and people that are fighting for space on the Beltline here in Madison or during rush hour traffic, they will fight you for the 6 inches in front of their bumper to yours. Agriculture, we plant seed in April and we have faith that we're going to get something by November. And in the meantime, we do what we can to tend it. We can't change Mother Nature. We can't change insects. We can't change any of that. But we have faith that something is going to be, something good will come of it all. Same thing with our calves born. Takes 2 years before we know if we made the right decision to keep her around. That is the way that we are brought up. And again, that's why there's even a bigger and bigger disconnect with those that do a lot of policy work in Washington, D.C. They're not from that kind of tempo of life, shall we say.
Pam Yonke is our guest. She is a fabulous farm babe. You hear her reports across the Civic Media Network. We just have a couple of minutes left. Pam, we talked to someone from the Wisconsin Land Trust last week, and I had no idea this was a thing that farmers can actually put farmland into land trusts.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. It's a tool that many farms use, especially if there's multiple family members that are not connected to the farm anymore, but still don't want to see the farm lost or broken up. There's some tax advantages. Also, really, it's the estate planning element that is most attractive for that. So a lot of different types of trusts being used more and more in Wisconsin agriculture. Again, to keep the farm as intact as you can land-wise, well, maybe some of the family members work through transitional decisions.
It's a good. Well, I just thought the whole thing was really interesting, and because we are losing our farmland, I can understand the lure of selling it off for development. The importance and the importance of keeping it as well. So it's got to be a tough decision.
Every farm kid listening to this broadcast right now has heard this phrase. They aren't making it anymore. Farmland, they aren't making it anymore. So if you have grown up in that, you just grip it with all of your might. I'm doing the same thing with my home farm in O'Connell County. I don't see tremendous huge development coming to the fine metropolis of Abrams, population 300 on a Packer Sunday, but by golly, it's going to take everything they got to pull it out of my hands.
Well, the next time we go on the road, we're coming to visit you. We're going to come and visit you wherever you are in the state. Pam Yonke is all over the state. She is all over the country. She is the fabulous farm babe. I highly encourage you to follow you. And are you on Facebook?
Yep. You can find Fabulous Farm Babe or Midwest Farm Report. Either way, we'll keep you coming along with us.
We will put those links in our show notes. Pam Yonke, thank you so very, very much.
We always love having
you on the show. Stay close. News is coming up next when we return. Public service announcement with Dr. Laura Hanks. Don't go away. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach coming to you live from downtown Milwaukee, day 3 of the Republican National Convention. You can see Pfizer Forum over our shoulders. We got Sweet Calby back in Waukesha on the board. If you would like to join us, you can call, you can text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. It's Wednesday. That means it's time for public service announcement with Dr. Laura Hanks, who is so dedicated to this program. Yeah. She is checking in from her vacation. How are you, Dr. Hanks?
Ciao, prego.
Okay, all right. So you know some spaghetti sauce names, whatever. It's fine.
I love that intro music, too. I know Greg picked it out just for me. It meant so much.
We're gonna get your Taylor Swift review before we wrap up the show at the end. But we did want to start, and we're going to kind of continue a conversation that we had yesterday with Dr. Kristen Lierley was here. Donald Trump has said frequently out on the campaign trail that if he is reelected, he will withhold all federal money from public schools that have vaccine mandates. And vaccine mandates have been in place in schools for decades and decades and decades. And this seems like a very unwise decision. So we talked yesterday, Dr. Hanks, just about how quickly something like measles can spread through a school in just a couple of weeks. I mean, in like a month.
Right. We've talked about that before, too. And it just how contagious it is. And we don't know that because we've never had to live through it. And that's why I'm so grateful of that New York Times article we talked about before that went through people that have experienced it, that actually lived through it. And just how scary it can be. And you guys are at the RNC, and you know, we've been listening to podcasts here. We were trying to disconnect, but we couldn't help ourselves. And sounds like a lot's been going on since I left the country. But you know, I heard some of Trump's comments when he called RFK Jr. and was talking about giving vaccines to babies and how babies change after that. And I just was so infuriated because it's like, that's what babies do. They change every minute. They're growing and that's part of development, Mr. Trump. Like, it's not the vaccine. The vaccine is protecting them from dying. It's not, you know, doing harm. It's not changing them into these alien babies or whatever the heck you think is going on. So, you know, that was obviously another concerning thing to hear once again.
Well, and just to reiterate, because I believe, you know, RFK Jr. has been a big anti-vaxxer for a long time and trying to draw connections between vaccines and autism. There are no studies that have been done connecting vaccines to autism, correct?
There was one study that tried to do it that was debunked. I believe it was in The Lancet, and we'll have to, you know, go back and check, but I'm pretty sure it was The Lancet article almost 15 years ago. And they had to go back and say, withdraw it and say that this was not, in fact, true and not based on, like, real, actual scientific evidence.
The problem is that now that one report says the information, so that's what they still use to this day. They don't care that it's been debunked. They don't care that it's been recalled. It's now their
right.
Not their Bible, but their way of going.
And that's the scary part of science, right? And that's why when we talk about, like, peer-reviewed journals and how important that is, and if that, you know, article is cited and people don't go through and actually look at, like, citations, when an article is pulled like that, it shouldn't be cited anymore. But, you know, again, politicians aren't scientists. And I think Dr. Lively said exactly that yesterday. And it's, you know, it's infuriating. It's, you're right, it's out there, but it has been since, you know, pulled.
Debunked.
From our...
Well, and I...
Yes.
And that just brings me back to Project 2025, which would essentially allow the president to fire all civil servants, including people who work for the CDC mm-hmm. and things like that, and can then give their researchers the outcome they want and say, do a study that comes up with these findings, because this is the result that we want. That's not the way that science is done, and that is not the way that science should be done.
No.
Have you actually been able to sit down and read all of Project 2025? Because I can't do it, and I know I need to, but I cannot physically.
No, I hear you. I spent about 2.5 hours one Saturday, and I did my best. It is a slog of a read. And I only got through. I mean, I was skipping around. We have talked to people who have been able to break it down, where it's not so murky and so difficult to process. And we're going to continue to talk about this. We've had on National Security Leaders for America. It's a group of 400, 700 former military leaders and people in civil service. And they're going to be coming on over the next few months to talk more specifically about Project 2025 and the ramifications of that. And it is not hyperbolic. We are not trying to needlessly scare people.
No.
Project 2025 will vastly change how this country works. It just will. Dr. Laura Hanks is our guest for public cervix announcement, talking again just generally about vaccines. The other thing that came up yesterday, Dr. Hanks, that I think is important to remind people, VAERS, and it's V-A-E-R-S, correct? VAERS is this public reporting site where people can go if you have an adverse reaction after you've gotten a vaccine. Now, that's a great place for the public to put this information that can then be shared, but that is put there so that can be further investigated. Just because someone says, and I used this example yesterday, I got the COVID vaccine and I grew a third eye, it doesn't mean that that has been verified. Just because it's on VAERS does not mean that this is a proven outcome of what happens after you get a vaccine.
Absolutely. And that was something that we really pushed during the initial round of COVID vaccines. And I know that I myself went on there and they you know, we're asking for any sort of symptoms. Like, did you have a fever? Did you have a sore arm? Did you have a rash? Anything like that. And I think that it is important to report that. I have definitely had patients who have come in and said, I have had reactions to vaccines. One of the hardest ones that I can think of, I had a patient who was several vaccines all at once. It was similar when I was in the Peace Corps. They just kind of like give you all of them at the same time, and she had a reaction and had no idea which one it was. And you know, she asked me, is it safe for me to get the COVID vaccine? And I was like, honestly, I don't know, because we don't know which one it is. But that's why it's so important that when you get a vaccine and when you get a reaction, to report it to these sites, so that they can not only have that information about how many people are actually having these certain reactions to vaccines, and we can actually have a description and a percentage, but also so that they can know which vaccines they have reactions to.
But that information on VAERS can also be misused by bad actors who will go to VAERS and claim, like, this is all vetted information, and yes, you can grow a third eye. That's not true.
Sure. Yeah, you could definitely, you could, you know, like, I mean, there are people out there. Or you could have, you know, a reaction that was not related to the vaccine. You could have had a miscarriage, let's say, in my line of work, that was not related because of the vaccine, but just so happened that you had the miscarriage right after you got the vaccine. And it's still, I think, helpful to report that, because we can look at numbers of how many miscarriages happen to the general population versus how many people got the vaccine and then had a miscarriage, or in your example, grew a third eye, you know? And if, you know, you can still use that data, hopefully, you know, again, this is like hoping on people being truthful when they report things to,
right,
to theirs,
right,
to then kind of suss that out, if that makes sense.
Dr. Laura Hanks is here for public service announcement, as she is every Wednesday at this time.
I think one of the big things, though, is going back to the whole original study on vaccinations and autism, once people hear or see what they want to hear and or see, it's hard. Because, like, I mean, Dr. Hanks, there isn't a doctor, at least in America, I can't say, but just like, who's going to say, oh, yeah, the vaccine is 100% safe. There's going to be no problems whatsoever. You're going to go in there. Nothing will ever happen to you, I guarantee it. But the people who are anti-vax make it seem like that's the case. There are always risks involved, and they tell you that. But you can't convince them of that because they've heard from some guy who's read somewhere, who saw on the internet once, who heard it on a podcast, that Jane will become magnetized if she gets the COVID vaccination.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I spend a lot of my days dealing with in the office, which is super frustrating. I think one of the most frustrating I just think the COVID vaccine in general just got so politicized. And something that really frustrating that happened to me was right when the RSV vaccine came out. And we were so excited for that. And we've talked about that before, about how RSV can just be so scary for little kids to get. And I had a patient who accepted, it was a week after the RSV vaccine came out, and she accepted the RSV vaccine but declined the COVID vaccine. And I said, well, I'm just interested on your, like, what your reasoning, like, what can I, you know, can we talk about this? She's like, well, I just don't think there's not enough data on the COVID vaccine. I was like, fascinating, because it's been out for 3 years and the RSV vaccine's been out for a week, and you just...
Yeah, yeah. And that was the thing, too, talked with Doc... Oh, go on.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, it was just so frustrating. And it's like, you know, again, with patient-doctor relationship, I don't want to ruin that relationship, but it was just like, just so you know, that's not necessarily true. And if you want to talk about research and data and evidence, can you please, you know, like, let's talk about it. Let me review it, and, like, let's go through it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just going to say with Dr. Lilley, we talked about, you know, when these vaccinations came out decades ago to things that have been eradicated, they were, these doctors were celebrating. There were parades. We were frontline headlines on the newspaper. And now it's like you came up with a vaccination. Tell us more. Convince me.
Yeah. And it kind of felt like that again with the RSV vaccine, because people were so excited about it, especially moms that had been through, who had had kids that have had the RSV. They're like, when can I get it? When can I get it? You know, yeah. And it was like just so exciting. And it was like, we were in that era again, but then we were also trying to say like, hey, it's also COVID season. Can you get this? And people were saying no to it. And it was like, oh my gosh, pull my hair out. Like, they're all safe, and there's even more evidence and data on the safety of COVID vaccines. So,
well, and I think it's amazing too, because you've had some of your medical one of your medical students on with you in the past, and they didn't even do chapters on things like measles anymore because we thought it had been eradicated, and nobody, you know, it's like, well, this is one less thing we have to worry about.
Yeah.
And now that's not the case. All right, we will continue our conversation with Dr. Laura Hanks. Stay close. Don't go away. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. It's torture. Don't say I didn't say I didn't warn ya. Boys only want love if it's torture. Don't say I didn't warn ya. So it's gonna be forever. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach coming to you live from downtown Milwaukee, day three of the Republican National Convention. You can see Fiserv Forum right over our shoulders. We have special coverage every night of the RNC from 7 to 8 p.m. Civic Media News Director Terry Bell with special reports of the day's events. Of course, Todd Alba taking over the airwaves from noon to 2 p.m. He is in Wisconsin Media Row near Panther Arena. And then Maggie Dawn and the Devils will all be covering other things that are happening today here in downtown Milwaukee. She joins us every Wednesday at this time for public service announcement. Dr. Laura Hanks is here. Dr. Hanks, we got just a couple of minutes to talk about a couple of new studies you found about postpartum depression.
Let's talk about it.
So what are the latest findings? Is this good news? Is this bad news? Is it more prevalent than we realized?
It is much more prevalent than we realized. And I think, you know, we've talked a lot about mental health, and just mental health in general is so stigmatized and not talked enough about. And I always am so grateful for Greg for like being so open and talking about it on the air. I think that that's like so helpful to decreasing the stigmatization around it. The society, SMFM, which is our Society for Maternal and Fetal Medicine, just came out with this big statement, finally backing Medicaid expansion to a full year after pregnancy. We know that 40% of births in the United States are people that are on Medicaid, and the majority of those patients are going to be at higher risk for postpartum depression. And so being able to, right now, we have this arbitrary 6-week window where that we see patients after they deliver. And 6 weeks is so short in the grand scheme of things. And patients that are on Medicaid are also at higher risk for preterm birth. They're at higher risk for gestational hypertension, gestational diabetes. So maybe they're in the hospital with their preemie baby and not able to get to the doctor in that 6-week visit. but then are going to have mental health struggles, understandably, because they've got a premature infant at home or in the NICU, and they're struggling to deal with that, and Medicaid's not going to cover that. And so it's so, so important to look into this expansion so that we can see our patients and be able to treat them when they need it.
Well, and again, we want to be a society that welcomes children and motherhood and all of these things, then we need to help mothers who want to be mothers get the care that they need. It's all a part of a piece. You can't say we love babies and we love children and then not help them when they're actually here.
Yeah, I mean, when I tell people that we are one of the only states in the union that not only hasn't expanded Medicaid through the federal dollars, but it's a 60-day coverage for mothers on Medicaid, and that other states that we will make fun of for being whatever state, they're shocked that we're not at a year. And it's embarrassing to tell them, and they're embarrassed because they don't know that either.
Right. And, I mean, our maternal mortality in the United States is, we do everything, maternal mortality is measured by, per 100,000 births. And it's 21 per 100,000 births. To put that into perspective, most places in Europe are in the single digits. And we have only been going up since the 1980s. We used to be in the single digits. We, in 2010, were, I think, just the first time we were in the double digits at 10, and now in 2020, we're at 21 per 100,000 births. That is unacceptable, completely unacceptable. And part of that, with Medicaid expansion, if we were able to reach out and see our patients in that postpartum period, there are so many times that patients could have been helped. There are so many conditions that come up, not just postpartum, like mental health and depression, but as I mentioned, hypertension, postpartum cardiomyopathy, things like that, that are life-threatening, that we could have access to patients if they have access to us by this expansion.
Well, hopefully that is something that will happen. We'll keep following this as time goes on. In the couple of minutes we have left, it's your chance. Let's hear your Taylor Swift review. Where did you see the show and how was it?
I know, going from like really, really depressing to just life altering, so happy.
But Taylor would be proudly talking about this.
My sister, who is here, who is, God bless her, a kindergarten teacher in Madison, Wisconsin, you know, like she is doing the work, and she is not getting paid a lot for it, but we forget it all. We came to Milan to see Taylor Swift, and it was incredible, life-changing. We saw her on the second night, where she did the mashup of Getaway Car and Out of the Woods, and mind blown. She's amazing. I don't care.
She is amazing.
I don't care what you think about me.
That only makes me respect you more, Dr. Hanks.
Even though,
if you know, you know, my friend.
Yeah, but even though, as we all know, per the male who wrote the column in Newsweek magazine about why Taylor Swift is a bad role model because she's 34 and she doesn't have children. Maybe if she keeps at it, she'll be successful one day. Dr.
Are her
Hanks,
eggs even good anymore? I mean, no one likes her.
Does she have any eggs left?
And she's, oh man, all these guys who want to make out with her who just like make fun of her. Ugh.
Was it
just a jam-packed show? I can imagine.
It was packed. I was sweating. I was covered in sparkles. The energy was amazing. It was like, I've never been around so many people, but felt so safe. Like you just were all there to be happy and enjoy this incredible female who is just, she don't need no man. She's just doing
She's
the
doing
thing.
All right on her own. Dr. Laura Hanks, thank you so very much. Enjoy the rest of your vacation. We will see you next week. Thank you, Calvin and Greg and Casper and Corey and Max and everyone who helps us get the show on the air. Thank you most of all for calling and texting and for listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today. and you have the chance to share it. Todd Alba, right after the news, keep it here. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.